All right, we're in 2 Samuel chapter 16, and then Lord willing, we'll cross over into chapter 17 as well. 2 Samuel chapter 16, we've been going through the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, and we are up to chapter 16. We're right in the middle of the story where Absalom rebels against his father. Today, we're going to call this section from 16:15 through chapter 17. End of chapter 17, that's going to be the apex and downfall of Absalom's rebellion. The apex being the highest point, be the mountain peak. And he hit the highest point basically as soon as he got into Jerusalem. And then the seeds of the downfall we'll see in chapter 17. Understand that even though we're taking some time to think through and plow through these chapters, all of the events in chapters 15, 16, and 17 happened in roughly a 24-hour period. Okay? So, in chapter 15, David gets... Absalom steals the hearts. But once we get to the part where Absalom said, let me go offer a sacrifice, and then they blow the trumpet, the message comes back to David, Absalom's been declared king. From that point, you know, in the middle of 15, 16, 17, we're talking about 24 hours or so. All of these things happening in a whirlwind day or two. And so, just bear that in mind. We've looked in chapter 15 where David made the decision to flee Jerusalem rather than endanger all the inhabitants, to give himself a little time to regroup, to protect his family. He left. Chapter 16, as they're on their way out, the servant of Mephibosheth named Ziba met them, and we call that his deceitful friendship, because I don't believe that was Mephibosheth's true intent. I believe Ziba did this intentionally to get back at Mephibosheth. And then we saw the disrespect of Shimei, the insults, throwing rocks at armed men. Okay, not the best strategy ever, but nonetheless, he's insulting him and cursing him for something he did not do. And we saw the deference to God by David. That is, he said, let him curse. Maybe God sent him. Maybe God will turn his curse into a blessing. All right, this is just in a matter of a few hours. We're going to pick up now in verse 15 of chapter 16. Read through the end of chapter 16 for right now. And Absalom and all the people of the men of Israel came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. Now remember, when it says the men of Israel, okay, at this point there is no distinction made between the men of Israel and the men of Judah. Okay, that split did not happen until Rehoboam's time, after the death of Solomon. Okay, so sometimes it'll be the men of Israel with Absalom, it'll be the men of Israel with David, but there's no distinction other than, you know, these were men of the nation of Israel. Okay, Absalom and all the people of the men of Israel came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. And it came to pass when Hushai the Archite, David's friend, was come to Absalom, that Hushai said unto Absalom, God save the king, God save the king. And Absalom said to Hushai, is this thy kindness to thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? And Hushai said to Absalom, nay, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, his will I be, and with him will I abide. And again, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son, as I have served in thy father's presence, so will I be in thy presence. And Absalom then said Absalom to Ahithophel, give counsel among you what we shall do. And Ahithophel said unto Absalom, go in unto thy father's concubines, which he hath left to keep the house, and all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. So they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house, and Absalom went in unto his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. And the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. So was the counsel of Ahithophel both with David and with Absalom. All right? So here we have, first of all, in this section, the arrival of Absalom. And we're in this section of chapter 16, we're going to see two things: the arrival of Absalom, the advice of his counselors. All right? The arrival of Absalom in Jerusalem. David gets wind that it's coming. David gathers his family, he gathers his men, and he's moving out. He's moved out as far as Mount Olivet, which is where he went up weeping in the end of chapter 15. And he's on his way toward the Jordan River. If you think about your Bible map, you got Jerusalem. He's headed in the general direction of Jericho and then the Jordan River. Okay? And David's out of town. He's a few miles out of town, and here comes the procession. Now, it wasn't just, the car pulls up in the driveway, and this procession would have been with much pomp and much attention. This is a parade. Okay, there may have been music. There were thousands of people, and tens of thousands of people with Absalom as they come in. This is a gigantic thing. Notice the people of Jerusalem did not resist as he came in. Okay? They had made the decision, all right, we're not going to fight. David and all the soldiers are gone. What good is it going to do me to fight? So they accepted Absalom in. He arrives in town, and you got the trumpets and the fanfare of, bow before the king. If Absalom had hired 50 men to run before him when he was trying to steal the hearts of the people, don't you think that Absalom's going to have fanfare now? Sure he is. He's got men blowing trumpets before him, declaring him to be king, prepare the way of the king, and all the trappings that would go with it. And Absalom, this is a grand procession as they arrive in Jerusalem. They come through the city gates, they make their way down the main street, and the procession goes to the castle that within the last 24 hours has been vacated by David and his family. Okay? You got the arrival here, And then they take possession of the house. and I love this. When we get down to verse number 20, then said Absalom to Ahithophel, give counsel among you what we shall do. As they're arriving there, it's kind of like, okay, what do we do now? but on the way to the castle, as a part of his arrival, Absalom meets Hushai. Now, it's interesting that even a deceptive, usurper, rebellious son like Absalom expected some scruples. Okay? You see here when Hushai, the Archite, David's friend, we see that description several times, met him, Absalom said to Hushai, is this thy kindness to thy friend? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? Okay? He expected Hushai to be loyal to David. He was a little bit surprised that this guy was doing the same thing to David that he was. Right? It makes you want to turn it around and look right back at Absalom and say, is this thy kindness to thy father? I mean, that's what you'd love to say to this smart aleck kid. But nonetheless, he is surprised at Hushai. And so he says, what are you doing here? Why wentest thou not with thy friend? Okay? Right here in the answer, we see some of the reasons that David wanted him to go and advocate for his cause. He says, nay, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, his will I be, and with him will I abide. Notice he did not say, Absalom, I love you, you're my king. He said, whoever God chooses and this people choose, that's the side that I'm on. Now, Absalom in his pride is going to assume, well, you see all these people that are with me? They've obviously chosen me, so that means he's with me. Okay? But if you look at it from the other side, you could see it the other way. He made a statement that you could take it any way you want it. Verse 19, and again, whom should I serve? Notice this, should I not serve in the presence of his son? Now, I love this phrase right here. As I have served in thy father's presence, so will I be in thy presence. There's a distinction there. There's a subtlety there. I served in your father's presence. I'm going to be in your presence. Now, Absalom takes it in his favor, like, all right, he's going to serve me the same way. But the word serve, I was a servant to, I was a counselor to, I was a friend of, and then he says, I'm going to be in your presence now. Okay? And he didn't actually say, I'm going to be loyal to you. But that's the way Absalom's going to take it. Okay? The way he said it here totally set Absalom at ease, and yet he didn't 100% cross the line. Okay? It's one of those, like I said, take it any way you want it phrases. Now here he's doing this in his mind in the defense of the anointed of the Lord who's suffering rebellion. Okay? And in his mind, and in reality, this is a time of war. Okay, you're going to get all kinds of arguments over, okay, did he lie? Is this approved? All right, the bottom line for us is it permitted for us to lie? No. Okay? It's crossing the line. When Rahab covered for the spies, God didn't judge her for that. Okay? Time of war. Here, time of war. I'm going to leave those things with the Lord. We're not in that time. Okay? It's our job to be truthful and to be completely truthful. Okay? And that's the method under which we're supposed to operate. Okay? But here, Hushai gives a very crafty answer. Verse 20, then said Absalom to Ahithophel, give counsel among you what we shall do. Absalom accepted the answer, accepted Hushai in. I mean, to Absalom, you've got to understand, what is his driving motivation? Pride. Okay? Along with that, rebellion and revenge. But the driving motivation here is pride. I can do this a whole lot better than my father, and he doesn't deserve to be king anymore because of what he did to me. Okay? And so, the driving motivation here being pride, Absalom is assuming that this is another feather in his cap. Okay? He's assuming that, boy, here's another of the wise men of Israel who recognizes the benefit of me being king. Right? And that's the way he's going to take it. So we have the arrival of Absalom. We have the advice of his counselors. Then said Absalom to Ahithophel, give counsel among you what we shall do. Among you, indicating a council, C-O-U-N-C-I-L, a group of people, of which Ahithophel was clearly the leader. Okay? The king is throwing out to his advisors now, all right? What do we do? Okay, I'm here. What's next? I'm the king. What do I do? That's the way I read this, and it's kind of humorous. But you understand, what background did Absalom have? None, right? He's a rookie. No experience. He says to Ahithophel, give counsel among you what we shall do. And Ahithophel said unto Absalom, go in unto thy father's concubines, which he hath left to keep the house, and all Israel shall hear that thou art abhorred of thy father. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. Okay? From a strategic standpoint, this was excellent advice. Okay? From a spiritual standpoint, it's horrible. Okay, but if Ahithophel's approach in all of this is from a strategic and apparently very little spiritual standpoint. Remember, what was it that we speculate drove Ahithophel to side against David? Bathsheba's his granddaughter. Okay, so he's motivated by revenge. He's motivated by hatred. And he is obviously a very wise man. Verse 23 says, the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was if a man had inquired at the oracle of God. Okay? The oracle, there are a time or two in the Scriptures where you have the word the oracles of God referring to Scriptures. But the oracle of God is as though you're getting a direct answer from God. This, in pagan terms, was used of a prophet or someone who had a word from God, an answer from the gods. But sometimes, you know, that terminology was used, the oracle of God, to refer to getting a direct divine answer. And so what they're saying is when Ahithophel gave advice, it was generally so wise, it was as though God was speaking through him. And so he said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go into thy father's concubines, which he had left, to keep the house. Now remember, we said concubines are treated as personal property. Okay? So the new king inherited all the property of the old king. The houses, the lands, the vineyards, the animals, and the concubines. Okay? They were treated as property. Is it right? No. Okay? Is that the way this was? Yes. So he said, here's what you do. Go in to your father's concubines. All right? We all understand what that means. And notice the motivation in verse 21. Then shall the hands of all that are with thee be strong. Okay? The motivation behind this advice is this. Burn the bridges. Okay? You've heard the story of the general who landed with his army on an island that they were going to conquer, right? And then he ordered his men to turn around and burn the ships. They set the ships on fire and sunk them in the harbor. What was he saying? There's no plan B. There's no exit strategy. There's no going back. Okay? We will either conquer these people or we will die, but this is our mission. No alternative. All right? That's going to make his men fight with a little more desperation. Well, that is exactly what Ahithophel is trying to accomplish here. Okay? There are some that are with Absalom 100%, like Ahithophel, for their own reasons. There are some, though, who are kind of going along with the crowd. They're seeing which way the wind blows, and right now the wind's blowing behind Absalom, so, all right, we're going to get over here. But if things go south, they would just as soon flip back over to David. And as they begin to see, oh, wait a minute, we wanted Absalom to rule with David. We wanted him to be the next ruler, but we didn't want to get rid of David. As they begin to see how this thing is actually going to play out, they may swing back over to David's side of this thing. So what Ahithophel is trying to do is make an irreversible break with David. Now, if you remember in 2 Samuel chapter 12, as part of the judgment that Nathan pronounced on David, 2 Samuel 12:11, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will raise up against thee evil against thee out of thine own house, and I will take thy wives before thine eyes and give them unto thy neighbor, and he shall lie with thy wives in the sight of this son. Verse 12, for thou didst it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. Now, chances are that David didn't publicize that too much. Okay? But he knew. And he knew when he left certain concubines behind what was going to happen. You see, in this passage of Scripture right here, we see an illustration of the wrath of man accomplishing the will of God. Absalom thinks he's, you know, serving his own purpose. And God, through Absalom, is judging David. But then he's going to, you know, Absalom doesn't have the free reign that he thinks he does. So, verse 22, they spread Absalom a tent upon the top of the house. Notice here the reap what you sowed and the poetic justice, we would call it sometimes. Where was David when he laid eyes on Bathsheba and where he made the initial decision to pursue it? On the top of this very house. Okay? In the very spot where David yielded temptation, God allowed public judgment on him. They spread a tent on top of the house. Absalom took the concubines into the tent. Everybody knew what was going on. And everybody also knew, all right, there's no way that David can overlook this. This is a no going back moment. Okay, this is a point of no return. And that was the purpose of Ahithophel was trying to accomplish. One commentator said this, even though he accomplished that purpose, there would have been unintended results. The negative effects on the people, one commentator said this, a voluptuous throne meant a sensual people. And what Absalom did would have encouraged the sinful nature of the people of Israel. It would not have encouraged them to be godly. It accomplished a political purpose, but again, he didn't think about the spiritual ramifications of this thing. Okay? And that was never really a part of Ahithophel's plan. It wasn't his desire to be the spiritual leader. It was his desire to be the political leader. So Absalom makes this break. In verse 23, the counsel of Ahithophel, which he counseled in those days, was as if a man inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. Now you understand why when David heard Ahithophel is with Absalom, he prayed, God, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Then God sent along Hushai, the end of chapter 15. And in 15, verse 34, David had said to Hushai, so will I now also... No. Here we go. For then thou mayest defeat for me the counsel of Ahithophel. Okay? David knew exactly the wisdom of Ahithophel. He had counseled David, and when David had followed his advice, he had benefited from wise advice. And we see here that Ahithophel's counsel from a purely secular standpoint, a political standpoint, was wise advice. All right? Chapter 17. Okay? I said today that our title is The Apex and Downfall. Okay? This is the high point of Absalom's rebellion right here. He is going to be king in Jerusalem for a couple months, 3 months at the most. And right here in chapter 17, you see the beginning of his downfall. Now, you'll see what I mean as we go through it. chapter 17, verse 1. Moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only, and I will bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest is as if all returned, so all the people shall be in peace. And the saying pleased Absalom well, and all the elders of Israel. Then said Absalom, call now Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear likewise what he saith. And when Hushai was come to Absalom, Absalom spake unto him, saying, Ahithophel hath spoken after this manner. Shall we do after his saying? If not, speak thou. And Hushai said unto Absalom, the counsel that Ahithophel hath given is not good at this time. For, said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field. And thy father is a man of war, and will not lodge with the people. Behold, he is hid now in some pit or in some other place, and it will come to pass when some of them be overthrown at the first, whosoever heareth it will say, there's a slaughter among all the people that follow Absalom. He also that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall utterly melt. For all Israel knoweth that thy father is a mighty man, and they which be with him are valiant men. Therefore I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea for the multitude, and that thou go to battle in thine own person. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground, and of him and of all the men that are with him there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city, and we will draw it into the river until there be not one small stone found there. Okay? The end of this is like a pep talk that an officer is giving to his men or a coach is giving to his players. Verse 14, and Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. Notice, for the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Understand, men do their part, God's in control. So we're going to see here, first of all, this is a crucial decision that's going to be made here. But we're going to see four things here in chapter 17. First of all, the cutthroat counsel of Ahithophel. The cutthroat counsel of Ahithophel. When Ahithophel said, let me choose out 12,000 men and I will arise and pursue after David this night. We said, if he could choose 12,000 men, there was a whole lot more than that. He didn't want to take everybody, he just wanted a certain number. He felt like with that number, he could outnumber and overwhelm David, and they'd have the element of surprise. Now notice, as we go back through this, how many times Ahithophel uses the word I. Okay? Let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night, and I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him, and I will smite the king only, and I will bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest as if all returned. Okay? It sounds great, and it was good advice, but it seems like Ahithophel played his hand right here. Okay? What was in this for Ahithophel was personal revenge on David. He said, I, me. Okay? I want to go and get David. I'll go get him, and I'll bring him back. And while he thinks that, you know, he is flattering Absalom and furthering his cause, there's an element here where, you remember when Joab had Rabbah and it was about ready to fall? Joab sent to David and said, you come, because if this city falls and I'm out here, they're going to get a credit to me, but if you come, then you'll get the credit for this battle. That was in chapter 8, 9, and 10. Well, in essence, that's what's going on here. Ahithophel is the one who gets credit for the kill, if you want to say it that way. Now notice, verse 4, the saying pleased Absalom well, and all the elders of Israel, they're like, yeah, that's good advice, that's great advice. And it was great advice. You see, in verse 14, the scripture says the Lord had appointed to defeat the what? Good counsel of Ahithophel. This was good counsel from a military standpoint. If you're going to start a rebellion, if you're going to overthrow the king, then you better make sure that the king is gone. It can never come back on you. So all the people, I mean, the saying pleased Absalom well and all the elders of Israel. Remember I said the it looks like there's a council here. Give counsel among you what we shall do. Here again, all the elders of Israel. Saul was the first king. David was the first king that was well received by all the people. But there's a transition during this time from 12 tribes and the elders are in charge to a one nation united under a monarch, under a king. And so here he's still got the elders of the tribes pulled in, which was a smart move for him to do, for them to bring their people along with him. But Absalom apparently had observed enough of the court decorum to know, all right, now, you know, when my father does this, or maybe even his grandfather, he would ask all of his counselors or his best counselors, what do we do? Verse 5, then said Absalom, call Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear likewise what he saith. Hushai may have been number two as far as rank. Ahithophel was far and away the most respected counselor. So Hushai may have been number two, but Hushai was without a doubt highly respected for his counsel to David as well. Call Hushai and see what he says. Now notice, Hushai begins to play on a couple of things. He begins to play on the vanity of Absalom, and he begins to play on the fear, okay, that the fear of the people and their respect for David and his men. Okay, everybody knew David's story. Saul had chased him. He ran for his life. And David, with 400 to 600 men, has eluded Saul and his army. Okay, they know the stories of the Philistines that David has defeated. They know the stories of all the battles that David's fought. David's reputation as a warrior was without question. His mighty men that were with him, their reputation as soldiers was without question. I mean, you think in your mind who you think of, okay, when you think of the reputation of valiant men. I mean, I grew up in an Air Force town, and I understand that, you know, when folks get in trouble, even on the ground, you know, they ridicule the Air Force until they need close air support. And then all of a sudden the Air Force is your friend, right? But I love the bumper sticker that says, when it absolutely positively has to be destroyed overnight. And it's a United States Marine Corps, okay? Some people may think, you know, if you go through the different branches and everybody has, oh, this is the best branch and here's why, you know. Whether you think of that, whether you think of a certain branch of special forces, okay? But you think of the most elite, fierce soldiers you can come up with, that is how David and his men were viewed by the people, okay? They were the Navy SEALs. They were the Delta Force, the Army Rangers, the Force Recon, whatever you want to call it, okay? Whatever branch you want to pick, they were the special forces and the elite. And now Hushai is going to play on that. Hushai said unto Absalom, the counsel Ahithophel has given is not good, notice the phrase, at this time. He didn't say it was bad advice. He said, oh, it's terrible advice. Immediately everybody's against him. He said, it's not good at this time. For, said Hushai, thou knowest thy father and his men, that they be mighty men. That's the same term used a little bit later on in Samuel of the mighties. The 30, the mighties, and the 3. And they're mighty men, and they be chafed in their minds as a bear robbed of her whelps in the field. That same expression is used in Proverbs. You know, as a bear robbed of her whelps is used as a... This was a commonly understood expression among them for someone who was hurt and angry, and you don't mess with the mama bear which is robbed of her cubs. Okay? That's the expression that he's using. And again, he's playing on the reputation of David's men and also the fears of some of the men present of going up against them. Thy father is a man of war and will not lodge with the people. Verse 9, behold, he is hid now in some pit or some other place. And again, they knew the hiding places of David and his strategies. They were legendary, how he hid from Saul for years. Okay? He said, look, you can go after him, and you might come on to women and children, but you're not going to find David. He knows where all the holes are in this part of the country, and he's already found one, and you're never going to find him. And it shall come to pass that when some of them be overthrown at the first, that whosoever heareth it will say, there is a slaughter among the people that follow Absalom. And also, he also that is valiant, whose heart is as the heart of a lion, shall melt, For all Israel knoweth thy father is a mighty man, and they which are with him are valiant men. Valiant is a little bit different word, but again, it has reference to strength or might and courage as well. And so he said, look, this, you don't mess with a bear robbed for whelps, and you don't mess with David and his men in their current condition. And notice, he's also playing on the fear. This is a crucial decision that's being made. Okay? If they go in and they chase David and they get him, it's all over. Absalom's king, no opposition. Even Joab and Abishai and all the people of Israel who would have been loyal to David would have to acknowledge, okay, the king is dead, his son is reigning, this is the appropriate thing. Okay? So, from that standpoint, if you go in and you get David, it's mission accomplished. However, Absalom has been in the palace less than 24 hours. If this thing goes south on him, it could all fall apart in a hurry. And that's what he's saying. There are people that if this thing starts going badly for you, there's people going to turn around and run because they know what David and his men are like. So he's playing on the fear. Now he's going to play on Absalom's vanity. Therefore I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee from Dan even to Beersheba, from north to south, the entire country, as the sand that is by the sea for multitude, catch this, and that thou go to battle in thine own person. Here's where he's playing on Absalom's vanity. So shall we come upon him in some place where he shall be found, and we will light upon him as the dew falleth on the ground. That's a pretty cool expression, is it not? We had a pretty heavy dew this morning. He said, look, it doesn't matter where he's hiding, the dew will cover. I mean, we're going to be so overwhelming in number to be like the dew on the ground. You can't get away from it. And he said, and of him and all the men that are with him, there shall not be left so much as one. Moreover, if he be gotten into a city, then shall all Israel bring ropes to that city, and we'll draw it into the river. Okay? Now, here he's playing to the elders as well. Okay? It's like, all right, look, we need to get everybody. We need to have such an overwhelming force that there's no chance he's getting away. He said, and if he's gone into a city, we'll pull it down and pull it into the river. That sounds like a pep talk, doesn't it? Are they really going to do that? Probably not. I mean, there are better ways of accomplishing that feat. But he is playing to the crowd, and he's playing to Absalom when he says, look, you need to go in your own person. And here, right here, it can click with Absalom. Wait a minute. Yeah, if I let Ahithophel go, then he gets the credit for it. But if I go, then it's Absalom got it. Okay? So again, he's playing to him, but he's also playing to his insecurities. Look, you're taking a chance. And if this thing goes badly, it's going to be bad for you. But if we get an overwhelming force, we're not really taking a risk here. We need to take the risk out of this thing, is kind of the line of thinking that he's pursuing here. Verse 14, Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel. So we saw the cutthroat counsel of Ahithophel. Now we've also seen the cautious counsel of Hushai. He said, look, let's take the risk out of this. Let's take a little more time. Let's don't be hasty. Let's really think through it, and then we'll just overwhelm them, run them over. So you got the cautious counsel of Hushai. And then number three, we see here the controlling providence of God. The controlling providence of God. Last phrase of verse 14, from about the middle of verse 14. For the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel to the intent the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. That word appointed is the word that means commanded. It's frequently translated command or commandment. Okay? And appointed has some of that same idea. Okay? But God, it was by the command of God, by the appointment of God, that Ahithophel's counsel would be defeated. In other words, Hushai made his case, but God made the way before him so that his case was accepted. Okay? That's why in the New Testament we can make the application, some plant, some water, God gives the increase. I mean, we must do our part, and we must be zealous, we must be faithful, we must be prayed up. But we cannot ever discount the providence of God, the filling of the Spirit, and the working of the Spirit of God. Here, God is without question working in this scenario to defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. So we see the controlling providence of God. Okay? Then, we're going to see here, beginning in verse 15, the rest of the plan that David had left in place. Then said Hushai to Zadok and to Abiathar the priests, thus and thus did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus have I counseled. Now therefore, send quickly and tell David, lodge not this night in the plains of the wilderness, but speedily pass over, lest the king be swallowed up and all the people that are with him. All right, this is still part of the providence of God here. Now Jonathan and Ahimaaz stayed by Enrogel, for they might not be seen to come into the city. And a wench went and told them, and they went and told King David. Nevertheless, a lad saw them and told Absalom. But they went both of them away quickly and came to a man's house in Bahurim, which had a well in his court, whither they went down. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and spread ground corn thereon, and the thing was not known. When Absalom's servants came to the woman to the house, they said, where is Ahimaaz and Jonathan? The woman said unto them, they be gone over the brook of water. And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. Okay? The providence of God is seen in the counsel of Hushai being accepted. The providence of God is also seen in protecting Jonathan and Ahimaaz. Okay? They were hiding outside the city. And it says they couldn't be seen coming into the city. They were hiding. And it says a wench went and told them. That's a word we don't use anymore. Okay? Why that particular word is used here, I don't know. But this is the same word that is used about 62, 63 times in the Scripture. And this is the only place that it was translated wench. Everywhere else is translated handmaid or maid or maidservant. It just means a girl. Okay? For a time, a wench in English had a little bit of a negative connotation. Okay? But there's no negative connotation here at all. This was just a girl servant. Okay? They were hidden near the well. The girl servant went down to the well. Nothing suspicious about that, right? She's going to get water. So she went down to the well. She passed the message to Jonathan and Ahimaaz. And then when they take off, somewhere along the route, somebody saw it and reported it to Absalom. Absalom may well have set up some spies, set up some watch around the city. Somebody saw it and reported it to Absalom. Okay? They send somebody to chase. Now, this says a well. It could be a well like we think of where you're going to dig down in and draw out water. It could also be what we might call a cistern. Okay? It's a pit that they had dug out to catch rainwater runoff to use during the dry seasons. Okay? At any rate, whatever style this was, they went down in it. It was dry or dry enough they could survive. They covered it and spread ground corn. Now, this had to have been a time of harvest, okay? Or that would have been a little suspicious. But if she's already out there working on the corn, whatever kind of grain it was, so she just spreads it over and keeps working on it, nothing looks suspicious. Again, the providence of God. The providence of God in protecting them. If those two young men had been caught and David had lingered, they might have come back and said, you know what, we need to go now. Or the whole thing is going to fall apart. But as a part of defeating the counsel of Ahithophel, not only did God work in the hearts of the elders and Absalom to accept Hushai's counsel, but he protected the young men that were runners. Now again, she said, look, they're gone. They chased them a while and they're like, okay, we can't catch them. These young men apparently were experienced runners. They were fleet of foot. They were messengers. And like, okay, we can't count. We can't do anything about that. They're gone. But notice, you see here in verse number 14, again, it says, the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel. God allowed Absalom to do some wicked things. He killed his brother. Okay? He started an insurrection against his father. He burned Joab's fields down in the meantime. He has rebelled against his father. He has committed a lewd act with his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. God allowed Absalom some rope, but God also had a line. God said, you can go this far and no further. You know, it is in our, so many times we look at it and say, why isn't God doing anything about fill in the blank? You know, why isn't God doing anything about this situation? Okay? Sometimes, a lot of times it's because we're in a bigger hurry than God is. Guilty. Okay? I want it done. I want it done now. I don't, you know, Lord, give me patience and give it to me now. Right? And yet, it could look in all of this as though God, the situation has gotten away from God. God's lost control. God has not lost control. Okay? Same's true in your life. Same's true in my life. God has not lost control of the situation. Okay? And God has a line and where he says, all right, this is as far as you can go and no more. From this point on, God has used Absalom to spank David. Okay? From this point on, God is now, I don't say manipulating, because God's that he doesn't have to manipulate in a negative sense. But God is controlling the circumstances to where he's turning it back around on Absalom, and now Absalom's going to be judged for his wickedness. God can work all of these things together at the same time, and it doesn't even give him a headache. In fact, he can multitask and do that and listen to prayers at the same time. I mean, we're thinking about this stuff going, whoa, man, this and this and this, wow, all this stuff goes together, and ooh. You know, and you're like, oh, man, my head hurts. God doesn't even have to blink. And yet God is controlling the circumstances in such a way that from this point on, God is now turning the circumstances in the favor of David, who he is chastening, but he's not cast off. And he's turning it against Absalom. God is still in control. And for, be it a lesson to us, either way, if we're the errant child that's rebelling against God, oh, I'm getting away with it. All right, yeah, but God's got a line. Okay? Or somebody else has offended me. Or, you know, you see a scenario and you go, oh, you know, why isn't anything being done here? God is in control. He has a line. And when it's crossed, God will take care of it. So we see the cutthroat counsel of Ahithophel, the cautious counsel of Hushai, and the controlling providence of God. We've got to quit there for now. But understand, in all of our scenarios, God is in control.